ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधिताम् भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् तद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीम् भगवतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी. Verse 36, chapter 4. Api chetasi papebhyah sarvebhyah papakrittamah sarvebhyah papakrittamah sarvanyana plavenaiva sarvanyana plavenaiva vrijinam santarishasi vrijinam santarishasi. Api chetasi papebhyah sarvebhyah papa kritamah sarvam jnana plavena eva plavena eva jnana plavena eva jnana plavena eva vrijinam santarishasi. After, in verse 35, after having told, Krishna having told Arjuna, says, having gained this knowledge, you will not go back to that delusion that you're suffering from now. That won't come back again. Because the delusion, the moha, is something that has for its cause ajnanam. And ajnanam is removed by knowledge. You get rid of the cause of the delusion, then the effect is gone. So once ajnanam is removed, you can't get it back, right? If that's what causes the delusion, then you remove the ajnanam, then the moha, the delusion is gone for good. And so he says, and once that delusion has been, once you've gained knowledge, which removes that delusion, by that knowledge you will see all beings in yourself, without all beings, bhutani, asheshena, all beings without anybody left over, all beings without remainder, so all beings, drakshasi atmani, drakshasi means you will see them all as in yourself, and also in me. See, all beings in yourself and also in me. So there he's giving the Mahavakya, because you are me, on the one hand, and then the other is, once you recognize from the standpoint of the jiva, this whole creation is Ishvara. So if the whole creation is in me, the Atma which is Brahman, but every jiva, all of this duality is all part and parcel of Ishvara. It's part and parcel of the whole. So that's a beautiful, it's kind of like two aspects of this vision. One is you recognize all beings are me and have their being in me, and they're very, the satyam mitya, their very being is me. Right? So I am the self of all beings. On the whole, this whole Maya Upadhi actually has its reality. It's Satyam, is myself. And from the standpoint of this creation, as all of the jivas, all of the duality within the creation, all of this duality, all of the beings are part and parcel of the whole. All are a part of the whole. And so, like the warp, if the whole manifest creation is a warp and woof of infinite number of laws, it's an infinite order, and everything within this infinite order is part of that infinite order. So like that, everything that everyone is part and parcel of Ishvara, and the whole Ishvara exists in me. So every being exists in me means I am its truth, and from the standpoint of the Maya Upadhi itself, every being is part of Ishvara. So you can take it on both of those ways. I am, from the standpoint of the Atma, I am Ishvara, and from the standpoint of the Upadhi, the Jiva Upadhi, I am part and parcel of Ishvara, which also needs to be understood. You say, I am part and parcel of Ishwara. I am Ishwara. There's nothing apart. There's nothing about the jiva upadi, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the moods, the emotions, everything that makes the jiva, the individual. There is nothing about this individual that is not Ishwara. Right? It's not that, not saying that this is the whole, that this is the whole, but it is Ishwara. And this is Ishwara, and this is Ishwara, and this is Ishwara, and this is Ishwara. There's nothing that isn't Ishwara. And so everything going on in this room, all of the interrelationships we have, everything that exists within our field of experience, within our prarabdha, which means the totality, even the people that you pass by on the street, that's all part of your prarabdha. They're all of that, all of the experience, your experience in totality is included in your prarabdha. And the entirety of that prarabdha, that's your little piece of Ishwara, right? And that you enjoy. Through your limited upadhi, you enjoy so much of the creation, right? Through your perception. Everything that you enjoy that creation is included in your little capsule, time-space capsule. It's part of your prarabdha, you know? And so to see all that, the totality of your experience, inner and outward, your psyche also is Ishwara. All the complexes are Ishwara. All of the things that are thrown up to the mind to handle from the inside and the outside, all are Ishwara. All are part of the infinite order. And so to be able to understand that this is not just me in the sense of a jiva, that all of these experiences, in fact, are Ishwara. There is no me. Or the me that is there is the self of Ishwara. There definitely is a me, but that me is not limited. If this is Ishwara, this body is Ishwara, the sense organs are Ishwara, the mind is Ishwara, the unconscious is Ishwara. There's nothing that's not Ishwara. The Atma is Ishwara. It's not like there's a separate Atma. So this Atma that I am is Ishwara. So in the end I have to be able to say, because then I'm talking third person, so then you say, oh, everything's Ishwara. Then I don't really exist because everything's Ishwara. No, you are Ishwara. That is the Mahavakya. So if you recognize everything is Ishwara, there is nothing but Ishwara, then who are you in all that? You are Ishwara. You are Ishwara. Not the jiva upadhi. The jiva upadhi is part of Ishwara. But the satyam of the jiva upadhi and the satyam of Ishwara is one and the same. That's the Brahman, the Atma yourself. So it's not just to say everything is Ishwara. You have to be able to say, I am Ishwara. When you say, I am Ishwara, then everything about the jiva upadhi, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the moods, the emotions, the I thought, everything that makes you an individual, me an individual separate from you as an individual, all of that has to be recognized as Ishwara. Right, so if I say, I am Ishwara, so if I say, I am the whole, if I say, I am Ishwara, I am then saying, I am the whole. To say, I am the whole, there can't be a dehatma buddhi. Dehatma buddhi means the identification, I am this body, mind, sense organs. If you say, I am the whole, then it's the Ishwara buddhi you've got to have. And that means all of everything about the limited upadhi has to be given over to Ishwara. And then you recognize that this me, the conscious being that I am, it is this me, which is Ishwara. This me, which is the conscious being, is Brahman. Brahman, with the Maya Upadhi, is Ishwara. Right? So the me that I am, when I look at me from the standpoint of what we call the Srishti Upadhi, the total Upadhi, Sameshti Upadhi, the Srishti means whole creation, the Sameshti Upadhi, the total Upadhi, then this very me is Ishwara. If I look at this same me, from the standpoint of a part of the Maya Upadhi, the Sameshti means total, the Vyeshti Upadhi means the individual Upadhi. If I look at this same very me from the standpoint of an individual within the total Sameshti, total Upadhi, I look at this me that I am from the standpoint of the Vyeshti, the limited Upadhi, then I become a Jiva. But I am neither Ishwara nor the Jiva. I am the Satyam, I am the truth of Ishwara, the truth of the Jiva. So if I say, I am Ishwara, that means I am this conscious being that I am, plus the Maya Upadhi. The Maya Upadhi that's responsible for this whole infinite creation has no, it's mithya. Ishwara is mithya, jiva is mithya, the creation is mithya. Mithya means what? It has no being separate from consciousness, and at the same time has no capacity of changing consciousness, changing being in any way. That's what makes it mithya. It has no separateness, separation from the adhishtana, what is the truth, the satyam. It has no separation from that, and it has no being other than that. So this creation, we say, this whole maya upadhi is mithya. It means there is a truth, which is the satyam. What is that truth? Is me, the conscious being. The body, mind, sense organs belong to the mithya. The me is the satyam. The me is the satyam, the truth, the reality, that's not subject to any kind of change whatsoever. So now to have of this vision, I have to be able to say, I am the whole. To say, I am the whole, I have to see all beings in me, and then all beings, including this samasta, body, mind, sense organs, is part of the whole, and the whole is existing in me. That is the vision. I have to be able to say that. I am the whole. It means there's nothing separate from me.
Even that sound?
John, why are
you? Oh, that's better.
Let this be a warning to all the cell phones.
I will put you in the toilet.
Okay. So anyway, that's a big, big, big verse for Krishna to say this to Arjuna. It's a huge verse. Just think of what he's saying, you know. Once you gain this knowledge, whatever delusion you're suffering from now, that's gone permanently. And gaining that knowledge, you will see, what's the Pala, you will see all beings in yourself as well as all beings in me. And then he goes on again to tell the greatness of this knowledge. And when I say that, this is how what Shankar himself says. He says, Kincha etasya jnanasya mahatmyam. And further, Kincha, this is so Shankar in his bhasha, he says further, this is the mahatmyam. This is the greatness, etasya jnanasya, of this knowledge, of this atma-jnana. So what does he say? Apichet asi papakritamaha. Apichet, even if asi papakritamaha, even if you are the greatest sinner of all times. Papakrit means a sinner, somebody who's a papi, who's an adharmi, who does wrong things. You know, so in English we have this sinner. So the sinner of the sinners, the greatest of sinners, because it's papakrit tamaha, the most sinful. That tama affects, you know, when you have like a good, better, best, the superlative, that tama affects is the superlative affects. So it's papakrit tamaha, the greatest sinner. So even if you are papebhyaha sarvebhyaha, from all of the sinners that there are, from all of the papis, all of the wrongdoers, among all of them, in reference to all of them, you are the most exalted, papakritama, you are the greatest, you are the worst sinner. From all of the sinners, you're the worst. So even if that's the case, sarvam jnana pavena eva vrijinam santarishasi. You will cross over samyak tarishati, clearly, definitely. Tara means to cross, from thri. Tarishasi, you will, it's future. You will cross over sarvam vrijinam, all sin, all papa. Vrijinam means sin, papa. So in Shankar's bhasha, he'll say, this ocean of sin, because you will cross over that, how? Jnana plavena, by the raft of knowledge, by the boat which is knowledge, jnana plavena. Indeed, by this, definitely by this raft of knowledge, by this boat of knowledge, you will cross over all of the papa, all sin, the whole ocean of sin, you will cross over that. Even if you're the greatest sinner that there is. So, very encouraging. So how can it be? You know, he'll give a little bit more detail in the next verse, but just we'll stay on this verse for now. Swamiji, in his commentary, uses a nice example for this, how this can be. If you're having a dream, and in the dream, maybe some of you have had dreams like this, I've had some dreams like this. In the dream, something really terrible has happened, or you've done something bad. Usually I've lost something, lost my purse or something. Say you're in the dream and you've done something terrible, and you're in that dream, you're feeling kind of the horror and the fear and the anxiety from what you've done. And what are the repercussions of that going to be? You've done something wrong. Okay? Now, you wake up from the dream. There's an incredible relief when you wake up from that dream. It's a kind of like, oh my God, it was only a dream. Thank you. It's only a dream. So those are amazing dreams. Right? But in a stroke, you're released. Right? In a stroke, you're released from that situation. Here it's a little bit different, but that's a good example for you to understand the difference between who you really are and the one who is identified with the karta, the karta bhokta. The karta bhokta is the doer, the enjoyer, the one who has the jivatvam, the one who's identified with this body, mind, sense organs, who is the person living in this situation, who is acting. The karta has doership, has that ego doership, and enjoyership. By enjoyership, when we use the word enjoy, it's kind of misleading. It's the experiencer. Enjoyer means the one who experiences the results of your actions, the one who experiences the karmapala. Karmapala means the results of your actions. Both punya and papa, sukha and dukkha, the positive results, the pleasurable results, and the painful results. So, the one who is identified with the karta, the doer, right, is the one that is the recipient of all of the karma pala, and it is the one who can be viewed as a saint or a sinner, right? Say we say, oh, this person is a saint. What a saintly person. What does that mean? Say you even view yourself as a saint as opposed to a sinner. You know, a dharmi as opposed to an adharmi, right? The one that you're identified with is the jiva, right? I'm a great dharmi. I'm a great dharmi because the actions that I do are dharmic actions. I am a doer of dharmic actions, and I reap the results of those dharmic actions. I'm a doer of dharmic actions, and so my antakarna, my mind also enjoys shanti, which is the karma pala, the reward, right? I'm not using the word dharma here facetiously, you know. I'm a doer of dharma. I follow dharma. I follow, you know. And so the reward, I reap rewards for that. One of the greatest rewards I reap is the experience of shanti in my antakarna, in my mind. Dharma gives a peaceful mind. It gives a certain amount of objectivity. So instead of going after material pleasures and enjoyments at the expense of dharma, that I won't do. And in fact, this is where when we consider a person as a dharmi, it's because dharma comes trumps pleasure. So a dharmi is somebody who will choose dharma over pleasure. It's not that they won't enjoy pleasure, but not at the expense of dharma. Pleasure means happy, you know, pleasurable events, pleasurable situations, but not at the expense of dharma. Dharma comes first. So for that person, there is a karmapala. That karmapala is a certain shanti in the mind. For the person who follows a dharma, then that's difficult. There's a karmapala for a dharma also. And the karmapala for that, other than, we're not talking about just material goods. Either person can gain material goods, you know, through their acts. But what type of antakarna they have, antakarna mind do they have? probably agitated. And how is that agitation handled? By trying to experience more and more and more pleasure, because if you're not experiencing pleasure, feeding yourself with pleasure, the mind doesn't have a natural shanti. And so that also builds on itself. But in either case, whether you're a dharmikarta or an adharmikarta, a doer, in any case, the jiva is there. If you wake, if you have a dream, and you're a saint in the dream, when you wake up from the dream, the saint is gone and you're just left with good old you. Right? Say you were a great saint in the dream. And walking along on water. Doing everything perfectly beautifully. Loving people and people loving you. That person's also gone. You're a poppy, you know, causing pain to yourself and others. You wake up from the dream, the poppy's also gone. So now, what would it take, you know? What does it take to go from the great, greatest poppy in the universe, right? What does it take to go from that great, greatest poppy to the jnani, to the one who's free of poppy? Poppy means the one who's the sinner. It only takes jnanam, nothing else. Knowledge. Because, in fact, the self of the greatest poppy in the world and the self of the greatest saint, as well as the self of the mosquito and the dog, and all beings, you know, that self, the Atma, is neither poppy or, you know, or saintly, or dharmi. Neither one. In fact, the self of the sinner is the self of the saint. The self of the sinner, the greatest self, the greatest sinner in the universe, is the self of Ishwara. Okay? So the self, even the self of the little mosquito, is myself. Right? The self of this, we don't think of this, the lamp, as having a self, because the lamp doesn't have a sukshma sharira, it doesn't have a subtle body. The table doesn't have a subtle body. It's all part of Ishwara's maya upadi. Right? So the sattva is going through it, and so all of this is known from Ishwara's standpoint, but this doesn't, itself doesn't have a subtle body. This doesn't have a subtle body. This doesn't have a subtle body. But this does. The plant does. The individuals do. The animals do. The insects do. They have subtle bodies, and so they reflect consciousness. And so we tend to think of them as having a self. But actually, they don't have a self any more than this has a self. There is one self of which this whole manifest creation is an expression of. And because there is a self, the entire creation has that self. But some parts of the creation have a subtle body that reflect that self, and so can have, if they've got a subtle body, they've got a jnana. Right? Because they will say then, because of the limitation of that subtle body, they will say, I am the self. They will, as though the conscious being from which this whole manifestation has come, right, is owned by them. As though my upadi, the body, mind, sense organs, has anything whatsoever to do with my being. It has nothing to do with my being, except that this body, mind, sense organs is a manifestation of the consciousness. But my being is not being contributed to. It's not because I have a body, mind, sense organs, that is not what makes me me. That is not what gives the self-experience the self-experience. The self-experience belongs to the Atma. It is the Atma. The I am. If you say, I am, get rid of the words and just your own swarupa, your own being, your own presence. That presence does not require a sukshma sharira. It doesn't require a subtle body. And so this I am is its own experience, and that experience does not belong to the upadi of this body, mind, sense organs, nor does it belong to the upadi lamp. or this upadi, right? Or the upadi table, or the upadi rug, or the upadi mosquito, or the upadi flower. Even though these have limited subtle bodies, the self experience does not belong to them. The self experience is with or without them. That's satyam mitya. Satyam means the self experience, the me, is totally free and independent of the mitya, of that which depends upon it. Right? So I can say, I, this conscious being that I am the self experience, I am the being, the existence, the sat chit, which this whole creation enjoys, right? So I am all of this, but none of this, or I could say like this. All of this is me. The existence, consciousness, being that this whole creation enjoys is only me. But I am not it. That's satya mitya. It is me, but I am not it. So the consciousness that my mind enjoys, that is me. But I am not it. If I take the mind away, the consciousness, me, is still there. Right? So the body, the conscious being this body enjoys, that is me. But if I take the body away, I am still there. That's the satyam mitya. So nothing can change me in any way. And yet I am the very being, the very self that all of these things enjoy. And so the poor old Hitler, the most evil, he is the personification, in a sense, of the most evil creature, you know. But who is the self of this most evil creature? Is Atma. Now the thing is, how can this most evil creature cross over, you know, to the self? That most evil creature already is the self. But the evil creature is the self is not the evil creature. And so, what is the raft to take the person from the mitya, the evil creature, to the Atma? Because the evil creature already is the Atma. So it's only the raft of knowledge. And that knowledge, what does that tell me? If the evil creature can gain the knowledge, right, then that evil creature recognizes, I am Brahman. And Brahman is not the evil creature. And so that's why even the most evil creature, the most evil being, the greatest sinner among all sinners, that person can gain this knowledge, become free through this raft of knowledge. But then, now, realistically, because, this is all very real, it's something to really be understood, actually, is that there is only one self, and that self is the self of all beings. And so that means that all beings, as long as they have a buddhi, you know, have the ability to gain knowledge, right? Any being can recognize, you know, aham brahmasmi, any being can recognize that. Of course, the problem comes in is that the being has to want to recognize that, has to be a mumukshu. So what does that mean? If that person, no matter how much of a sinner, how many mistakes they have made, what kind of things they have gotten themselves into, if they become a mumukshu, a jignyasu, one who wants to know, then that person definitely can recognize, you know, I am Brahman, because that is the truth of who they are. There is no distance between the papi and the atma, nor is there any distance between the dharmi and the atma. The dharmi also is bound and has to recognize, I am Brahman. The Papa Krit also has to recognize, I am Brahman. But to recognize whether you're a dharmi or a dharmi, either one has to convert into mumukshuktvam. Either one. the Dharmi has a better chance of that because they have a certain shanti in their mind that allows for self-reflection. But the papakrit can also realize, I'm doing nothing but suffering. I am just, my life is hell. And something can come along and wake them up too, to make them realize, I want to know what the truth is, to make that transition into becoming a jignyasu. Jignyasu means one who desires to know. And it doesn't matter who you are. And this is in the Brahma Sutras, in Shankara's introduction, and Atato Brahma Jignyasa, now the desire to know Brahman. In that sutra, he talks about this. Who is the adhikari? The one who has the desire to know Brahman. Who is the adhikari, the qualified student? Is it only the brahmanas? You know? Only the priestly class? Or there's always this problem. Is it only that men are allowed to study and not women? That was in the caste system, and maybe women shouldn't be able to study, only men can study. Only Hindus who are Brahmins can study. You know, no women, no children. No. Shankara deals with this very, very clearly in the Brahma Sutras, in this first sutra. The person who is qualified to gain this knowledge is the mumukshu, the one who has that desire, the sadhana chatushtya, the desire, who has viveka, vairagya, shamadhamu, paratita tiksha, all of these, mumukshutvam. The one who, that's the adhikari. So the mumukshu, the jignyasu, is the adhikari. It doesn't matter where they come from, whether they're a man, whether they're a woman, whether they live in India or the United States or Timbuktu, as Swamiji will say. It makes no difference at all. What makes a person qualified for this knowledge is solely their jignyasa, their desire to know, their mumukshutvam. They've recognized the problem. They've recognized the problem. Then that person, the teacher, will teach that person. And the teacher should teach that person because that's what their qualification is. It's not about being a brahmana. It's not about being a brahmachari. It's not about any of that. It's about being a mumukshu. And so if a papakrit becomes a mumukshu, then that person will be available, their psyche, their antakarana, will be available for this knowledge. That's what's important. And so if they have to learn a lot in terms of proper behavior so that they can gain shanti and have a mind that's available for this teaching, they will do that. They will have to go through all of that and do all of that because they're a mumukshu. If they're a mumukshu, then what is your primary... What is primary for you in your life is gaining knowledge. If self-knowledge is not primary for you in your life, no matter how busy you are and how much trivia you have to do, which is just part of life, no matter how busy you are, how much trivia you have to do, this knowledge is primary. If it isn't primary to you, you're not a mumukshu. That's fine. You don't have to be a mumukshu. But this knowledge is meant for a mumukshu, and this knowledge blesses a mumukshu. The mumukshutvam isn't there. This knowledge doesn't yet have too much to say to you. Because from your standpoint, there's still plenty of other things for you to do, right, in order to solve this problem. The mumukshu is the one who has recognized, no, this is what I need in order to solve this problem. And everything else I do, everything, is for antakarana shuddhi. Right? It's for gaining the mind, getting the capacity, right, to gain nishtha in this knowledge. So. Once in a while, this noise comes in to my, it kind of penetrates into my brain, and then it goes out. Okay, so let's look at this next verse, because these next two verses are really keeping this in view. This verse, this papakrit verse. Yatai damsi samiddognihi. Yatai damsi samiddognihi. Basmasat kuru terujana. Basmasat kuru terujana. Jnanagnis sarva karmani. Jnanagni sarva karmani basmasat kurate tata basmasat kurate tata yata edamsi edamsi samiddha agnihi basmasat kurute kurute arjuna jnanagnihi sarva karmani basmasat kurute tata. Says yata, just as samiddha agnihi, agni which is hot and burning, like a conflagration, a hot burning brilliant fire, agni which is powerful, which is burning and bright, just how that agni, that fire, agni means fire, just as that agni, basmasat kurate means to reduce something to ashes. So just as agni will reduce a conflagration, agni which is hot and big and burning, just as that will burn edamsi, fuel, wood which is fuel, just as that will reduce wood to ashes, jnanagnihi sarva karmani basmasat kurute tata. Similarly, this fire of knowledge will reduce all karmas to ashes. Okay? Let's shut it.
That window there.
We'll suffer the heat for a while.
Well, it's the window behind the TV that catches a lot of the sound.
Oh, that's okay.
Usually they move on about now.
Yeah.
That's a different group.
Night vision. Better.
No, they usually don't come.
They rent a pavilion on there.
What?
They rent a pavilion so there's a party.
Oh, there's a party running. Oh, that's cool.
Nice party, huh?
Should I leave this one and see if that helped?
We'll try. You won't have to get up again.
Okay. I will.
I didn't realize they were having a party. That's kind of expensive. Okay, so everything gets just like a fire reduces wood fuel to ash, like that knowledge, the fire of knowledge will reduce all of karmas to ash. The same thing of what we're talking about. Part of what in gaining this knowledge, what one recognizes is that this me, the self, is not a karta. Doership doesn't belong to the Atma. Neither does doership, enjoyership, or knowership. The Atma also is not a knower. Even to have knowership, you require the upadhi. Without the mind, just think about this. Without your sense organs, right? And the sense organs are upadhis. They belong to the Maya upadhi. They belong to Ishvara. The mitya, okay? Without your eyes, there's no sight. So if you say, I am a seer, that E-R, seer, hearer, toucher, if you get, as you remove upadhi by upadhi, like each one of the sense organs, those E-Rs go. In other words, without the eyes, I'm not a seer. Seership belongs, I need the eyes for that, to hear anything, hearer, right? I need the ears. What about thinker? A thinker. I need the mind. I need thoughts to be a thinker. Thoughts exist within duality. They're part of the mitya. They're part of Ishwar. They're part of duality. That's not the nature of the Atma. The Atma doesn't have parts. The mind, does the mind belong to the Atma or to Ishwar? You have to say it belongs to Ishvara because it exists within Maya. And so if I say, I am a thinker, that's ahankara. The I am is the ahankara. and thinker, right? I am a thinker. I'm identifying my being, consciousness, with the mind, right? I am a feeler. What about all my emotions? I am happy, I am sad, I am agitated, I am blissful, I am calm. Samsara. That is all belongs to Ishvara. It all belongs to the creation. It's all nitya, belongs to Maya. So you think, I am ignorant. Karana Sharira. Ajnanam. I'm identifying now with Ajnanam. I'm a knower. I know this. I'm ignorant of this. Right? Now, still, all of these things. How about even I am? I am separate from you. Each one of us says, I am, I am, I am, I am, I am. That's all ahankara. That's a thought in the mind. I am, the I am thought. So what do we have? 10 I am thoughts in the room. Right? 10 I am thoughts. How many? There's 10 I am thoughts. How many selves are there? See, the 10 I am thoughts, the 10 minds, the 10 sets of emotions, the 10 sets of sense organs, the 10 bodies, right? All of those are Ishvara. So where is knowership? Outside of the upadhi, where's knowership? So now we ask, is consciousness your me, the self that you are, this conscious me, your presence, is it performing the function of knowing? It is consciousness, but is it directed consciousness, subject-object consciousness? Say no. Subject-object consciousness has to take place within duality. Seer seen, hearer heard, thinker thought. That exists within duality. My presence is the conscious being that is the conscious being of the thinker and the conscious being of the thought, the conscious being of the seer, the conscious being of the seen. It is the conscious being of the subject and the conscious being of the object. When the instant we say subject-object, two, we're in duality. The Atma is not the knower knowing the known. The Atma is the consciousness which the knower enjoys and the consciousness which the known enjoys. Right? The known is known, so it exists in consciousness. The knower is the one who identifies with the consciousness in reference to the known. Right? But in fact, the consciousness is there as the consciousness of the knower and the consciousness of the known. Now, it's exactly the same in reference to the karta, this kartatvam, doership. I say, I am the doer. What does that mean? Like, I grasp something with my hand. That's doership. I walk the legs. That's doership. I speak. These are all the karmendriyas, right? I speak with my organs, with my vocal cords, with my mouth. I'm a karta. I'm a speaker. I'm a walker. I'm a talker. This ER again. Right? I'm doing all kinds of things. Who's doing it? Is there any action that is taking place free of the upadhi? I'm thinking. I'm doing. I'm working so hard. I'm thinking. Right? I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking about that. My mind is very active. My mind is very engaged in this problem. I'm a thinker. All of these activities, all of this doership is only in reference to the upadhi. See that? You have to, if you're doing anything, you have to be, the upadhi has to be doing it, not the atma. In order for the Atma, to think the Atma is doing it, you have to identify the Atma with the upadhi. The Atma is not doing anything unless you say that the Atma is the upadhi, which you can't say because the upadhi is known, right? The body, the mind, the sense organs, they're all known. And so now, what we have to do then is recognize me, myself, as the very conscious being that the upadhi, the body, the mind, the sense organs, enjoys, all right. But is it doing anything? Is it thinking anything? Is it feeling anything? What about all these emotions that come and go? Where do the emotions reside? We say in the antakarna, in the chitta, in the mind. Are the emotions known? Yes. Do they come and go? Yes. Right? Just like everything, every vritti in the mind. So, what we have to get to now, so, okay, say we understand that. Then I ask you, are you yourself, are you a knower? Is consciousness a knower? Is consciousness a doer? Not without the upadhi. Is consciousness, this is gets interesting here, does consciousness experience anything? Does it experience emotions? Does it experience your thoughts? Does it experience the world? Say no. With the upadhi, yes. From the standpoint of the upadhi, yes. But from the standpoint of itself, what is its experience? What is the experience of consciousness? From the standpoint of itself. You'd say the experience of consciousness from the standpoint of itself is consciousness. And so now, why is this important? Here you are, sitting here with this upadhi, experiencing this room. And you're experiencing this room through this upadhi, through your sense organs, through your mind. Right? So all of these, the vrittis are here, the thought modifications are here. So now what you have to recognize, at one and the same time, there's your being, whose experience is your being. Not as a dual experience, but the experience of me is me. The conscious, the experience, that's why we use this word self-evident. We say the experience of the experience of consciousness is consciousness, not in subject-object, but in the sense that consciousness is self-luminous, self-evident. So my own presence is its own self-experience. This self-experience, me, is the constant, which nothing at all is ever away from in any way. So, now, in reference to now, if I'm looking out through my sense organs at this room, I'm experiencing this room, there is my presence, the me, that is not doing anything. And, at the same time, through my sense organs, there is the experience of this room and all of the names and forms. So there's a viveka that you need there. You have to recognize the changeless, self-evident presence of consciousness of me, which is not doing anything. In other words, this me is not looking this way or that way. It's not looking up or looking down. It's not doing anything except shining as consciousness. And absolutely everything in my experience shines after that changeless presence, which is me. That's what needs to be recognized. And so here, when we say, this fire of knowledge burns all karmas to ash, it's because I recognize that karma itself is mitya. Karma is mitya. The karta is mitya. The truth, the atma, is free from karma completely. It's free from karta, the doer, and it's free from karma. Always. Now, always. That means the conscious being that I am has never been a karta. I've never been a doer. I can't be a doer, and I never will be a doer. So say this is understood. Now let's look at the three types of karma that are attributed to you as a jiva. Prarabdha karma. Let's go to the first one, sanchitta karma. Sanchitta karmas are all of the karmas in your account. Everything, every karma that you've ever done that is yet to be fructified, an infinite number of karmas that belong to you. They're unfructified results of actions. That's the sanchitta. Is the Atma subject to sanchitta karma? The jiva is. The transmigrating jiva is subject to sanchitta karma. The sanchitta karma is what causes, it's from that the prarabdha karma comes. Okay. Is the Atma subject to sanchitta? No. What about agami karmas? Agami karmas are all of the karmas that I'm doing now that will go into my sanchitta file. Right? The subtle results of the karmas that I do now, the actions I do now, all of those go into the sanchitta and they will manifest later at another time as prarabdha karma. Am I subject to those sanchitta karmas? Will they result now, later? Will they manifest later as prarabdha karma for me? It depends on who the me is. From the standpoint of me, from the standpoint of Atma, there is no karma. There never has been any karma, and there never will be any karma. And so as the Atma, if there's no jivatvam there, for me, there is no more sanchitta, and there's no agami. Now, what about the prarabdha karma? The prarabdha karma is the karma that's manifesting now. So even with your knowledge, there's nothing that you can do about the prarabdha karma that is going to take you from birth to death. But even for the jiva, even for the jnani, this prarabdha will go from birth to death because it's already an empirical reality. It's already part of Ishvara. But now the thing is, even now, with this prarabdha karma, what is that in reference to you, in reference to the Atma? Does the Atma have prarabdha karma? You say no. The Atma doesn't have prarabdha karma. It doesn't have any karma. And so even at this very time, with this prarabdha karma that you have to experience as long as the upadhi is there, the Atma is not subject to that prarabdha karma either. You see that? It doesn't, because it's free of all karma. However, the prarabdha karma is the one that you can't be released from other than by experiencing it. Right? The Atma is always released from it. The Atma doesn't have any karma. But the jiva, in order to be free of the prarabdha karma, simply has to get free of it simply by experiencing it, because it's already in empirical reality. See that? So what they say is, for the jnani, the one who has self-knowledge, you recognize now you're not a doer. There's no kartritvam or bhoktritvam, doership or enjoyership for yourself, for your being. All the while, you're enjoying it here. The kartritvam, the doership, the enjoyership, all of the experiences are here for you, but they're here as burnt seeds, because while you're enjoying all of these things, experiencing all of these things, doing all of these things, yourself is free. Doing them, you're not doing them. That's why that famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita that's so often mutilated completely. seeing I don't see, hearing I don't hear, thinking I don't think, it was blinking I don't blink. Because both are true. Blinking away, you're not blinking. Talking, you're not talking. Right? Hearing, you're not hearing. Right? Because both are true. The Atma is free. And at the same time, all of this is going on. So the Jnani knows all of that. But this experience here, this experience of the jiva, is going to be there as long as the upadhi is there. Once this upadhi drops, there is nothing, there's no Jnanam left to cause that jivatvam to remain. And so when the ajnana, when the prarabdha exhausts itself, then what is your status? Your status is Ishvara. That is who you are anyway. You are Ishvara. But this jiva upadhi, that is, you're taking your being, which is the whole, is now being experienced through a limited upadhi. That limited upadhi you're released from. And now instead of being identified with a limited upadhi, you are whatever Ishwara is. You know directly what you are, the Atma, because that doesn't have any parts. The jiva does not have the experience of the maya upadhi in total. Right? And so when you release from that jiva upadhi, then you just abide as Ishwara. There's no jiva upadhi, for this jiva upadhi is gone. And so with the exhaustion of the prarabdha karma, then even in terms of one's experience, there's no sanchitta, prarabdha, or agami karma, because that is not the truth of yourself. It's not the truth of yourself right now. And that freedom from knowership and doership is aparoksha. That's not something that you wait for, to have no upadhi. That's something to recognize here and now. The aparoksha, the changelessness of your being is it is the abiding satyam of all of your experience. And so that's where the viveka comes in, to recognize that, right now I can say, as I'm knowing you, I'm also not knowing anything. I'm simply being myself, and at the same time with the upadhi, I'm knowing. Same time as I'm hearing, the same time I'm hearing, I'm not hearing. That's just viveka. That's standpoints. And recognizing aparoksha, directly, immediately, that standpoint. And it's that which one comes to, that absolute freedom of this kartritvam, this doership. Freedom from doership is freedom from karma. Right? If you're not a doer, there's no karma. If you're not a bhokta, the enjoyer of karma phala, there's no karma. The karma in the word karma, which is action, brings in both karta, the doer, and bhokta, the enjoyer. Karta is the one who does the action. Bhokta is the one who receives the karma phala, the result of the action. So we say karta bhokta. So the karma involves the karta bhokta. If you're not a karta, if you're not a bhokta, then where is karma? So the jnani is the one who's completely free from all karma. And that is aparoksha jnana. That's not a hypothetical knowledge. That's something that is experientially true in terms of my own swarupa, my own nature. That's something that needs to be recognized. So now, next time we'll do the next verse, but if you think about the previous verse where he says, even the greatest sinner, right, crosses over the whole ocean of sin through the raft of knowledge. That was the verse. Now he's saying how that raft of knowledge, how that knowledge itself, which is like a, now it's a fire, the fire of knowledge. Raft of knowledge is now the fire of knowledge. Burns all karma to ashes. Right? Just like a conflagration, how it will burn wood to ashes, this fire of knowledge will burn all of this kartritvam, bhoktritvam to ashes. It'll remain as long as the prarabdha karma is here, that I am thought, I do, I see, all of these as there as burnt seed. It's like a burnt seed because it won't fructify, because your own swarupa is known. You don't become an actor. When I say I'm seeing you, I don't become a seer. I am hearing you, I don't become a hearer. I'm experiencing sukha and dukkha, I don't become a sukha and dukkhi. Sukhi and dukkhi, right? a happy person or a sad person. In spite of being a happy person or a sad person, I am neither a happy person or a sad person. I'm the Atma. In spite of seeing, I'm not seeing. In spite of hearing, I'm not hearing. I hear, but myself is free from hearing. I see, but myself is free from hearing. From seeing. That's what I have. That's the viveka that I have to recognize. And it's jnanam that takes me to that point. Jnanam is that recognition. Let's put it that way. Approaching jnanam is that recognition that frees me from all karma. Okay, let's stop there. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
What's the big distortion?
Now we can open. What?
What's the big distortion in that verse about I am a seer, yet I am not a seer? What? How do they?
How that can be distorted is that they will say the jnani is they seem to be looking at you, but they're really not. They seem to be hearing, but they're really not. So, like say you think that here I am talking to you, but then you think it only looks like I'm talking to you. I'm really not talking to you from my standpoint.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of strange.
And then they try to imagine what that is.
What that would be like.
Yeah.
So say I'm walking around, seeing but not seeing.
How can I do the same thing?
Seeing but not seeing, yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing.
How do I do that?
How do I do it? It's not possible.
Then they end up saying, well, we can't know.
Yeah.
It's very subtle.
It is subtle. Viveka is subtle. That's why they use the Hamsa bird as the example for that. The Hamsa bird goes to the little pond, what do you call that, bird bath? And there's milk and water mixed together in the bird bath. And the Hamsa bird puts its beak in and sucks out the milk. That's the example for Viveka. Because there is no difference between Satyam and Mithya. There's no separation between the two. There's only one thing there, really. Right? Like rope snake or our good old clay pot and rope snake. To understand Satyam Mithya, those are the two examples that we really sit with. You know, one can't be without the other. It has no being at all without the other. So how to separate the two?
Well, that doesn't mean we have to constantly differentiate between the two. Or is that a constant process?
It isn't, because once the ajnanam has been removed, the ignorance that has caused you to take the one for the other, once the ignorance is removed, then it becomes an obvious thing. The ignorance has to be removed. Right? Otherwise you don't have to walk around performing the act of, you know.
Yeah.
That's why they say knowledge, self-knowledge is ajnana nivritti, it's the removal of ignorance, it's not the gain of knowledge. If it's the gain of knowledge, then you have to keep the vritti coming. Right? You have to keep thinking. I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am Brahman, you know, or my being is I am, my being is free and independent, it's free and independent. I have to see over and over and over again.
Yeah. We don't have to do that, do we?
You know, a lot of times, it seems to me, I could be wrong, that so many, I've been thinking about this, that so many of the verses that we hear, not all of them, so many of them, they almost seem like they're like idealized in a way, in that they, well, maybe Panchadashi more discusses the kind of gradual gain of knowledge, because I don't think it's like one minute you're an ajnani and the next minute you say, oh.
No, it's not like that, because there's so much to understand.
Yeah.
Because this anyonya adyasa, this mutual superimposition, could not be more pervasive. There is no place in one's experience where that superimposition is not there between Satyam and Mithya. And so you can think of how entangled the jiva the individual is with the world on how many levels? Every level. Every single level. There's entanglement between the subject and the object, the jiva and the world. And, of course, the juice of it all is ananda. So the entanglement is also very much loaded with pleasure and pain. This entanglement is pleasurable. This entanglement is painful. This type of a thought is pleasurable. This type of a thought is painful. So the pleasure-pain, the ananda, is also pervasive through this net. And then what do we want, of course, is ananda. But ananda has been so fully superimposed onto the world in its positive and negative aspects and everything in between. Positive is, this makes me happy. Negative is, I have to get away from this, it makes me sad. And then all the nuances and varieties of that, my relationship with the world in terms of ananda. And ananda is my wholeness, what makes me me. It's the wholeness of consciousness, you know?
And you look in the world for that. And you find that in the world.
So it takes a lot of untangling this viparita bhavana, which is why Vidyaranya spends so much time on this viparita bhavana, you know, this mistake, where the superimposition is real. That's what viparita bhavana is. The Atma is one with the jiva, and the world is real. Jagat Satyam, right?
Just the opposite.
And the Atma is the Deha, the Atma, the self, is the body, and the world is real. That's samsara. So the entanglement between the identification of the Atma with the body and then the body entanglement with the world is complete. So, to unwind all of that, it's not enough for the mind, you know, just to recognize the changeless, the vision, but won't do it just to recognize that, oh, your being is changeless. And your being in reference to the upadhi is changeless. The upadhi's relationship to the jagat, all of that has to be straightened out. The mind's relationship to the body, it all has to become mitya. See, that's the thing. That jagat satyam is very real. So, first of all, the body has to be given over to become part of the jagat, and the jagat has to become mitya. That's a huge task. There's a lot of clarity, a lot of things that you have to see clearly. Because really the freedom is, I am the whole. Because if I'm not the whole, then this is different than from the self, and this can hurt me. And if this is satyam, then this is satyam. Right? And then this satyam can hurt this satyam. It can hurt me. It's a mess. And so that takes a lot of understanding, a lot of clarity, a lot of having the mind be exposed to this knowledge so that the mind can unwind also. What about all the unconscious stuff?
There's no hope.
That unconscious stuff is a lot of stuff. And the problem with the unconscious stuff is that it's painful. And it's hard to sit with pain. That also takes a lot of viveka.
Yeah.
A lot of shraddha and a lot of viveka to be able to sit with pain and be with pain in an objective way and in both objective and appropriate. You have to be with the pain properly and objectively so that pain can work itself out. Can transform.
How does it happen sometimes that younger people are drawn to this? Because it just seems to me so much that you have to reach a certain level of sophistication with the world. I mean, because a young person maybe doesn't have, well, I must be doing it wrong if it's not going my way. You know, I'm not skilled at getting what I want. So then you get more sophisticated on making the cocktail, so to speak. You know, a little of this, a little more of this. But young people don't have that experience, so I guess.
So they say for that that that's just it's samskara, samskaras. Mm-hmm. So it's punya from their last life. Mm-hmm. Say they didn't quite finish the task in their last life. They take a birth, this life, and then their karma aspires to get them to this knowledge as quickly as it's appropriate for them.
Right away.
You know, like, that's what, because Arjuna was worried about that. He asked to Krishna, he said, oh, this is clear to me now, but I don't think I can hold it when I'm in the middle of the battle. What will happen if I get killed in the battle before I have nishta in this knowledge? Because it's clear now, but when I go out there, I don't think so. What will happen to me? He was concerned about it. And then Krishna said, what will happen is that you will, when you take the next birth, your next birth, you will pick up where you left off in two ways. Either depending upon your samskaras and what needs to be worked out for you, you'll either be born into a dharmic household and then meet with your teacher later. Or you'll be born into a house of jnanis, of yogis. It just depends on, but in either case you will be reunited with your knowledge. And so there's some people that come to this knowledge at a very young age. But it's not really if you look at, say, their previous life and previous life, this is the hangover. This life is the hangover, you know, because they didn't quite finish it last life, and so they finish it off this life.
Carol, I think I'm confused in this area that you're the creator of your universe, you are the lord of your universe, as relating to your Ishvara. I see how you're presenting, you are Ishvara, Ishvara is the whole. But I've heard this before, and I just don't make sense of it because I don't hear it within the teaching as the way.
Well, say you say you are the Lord of your universe. Mm-hmm. That sounds like some of this kind of New Age stuff. That's not what I've said. I don't say you're the Lord of your universe. I say you are Ishwara. If you say, that's kind of odd if you say you are the Lord of your universe, that sounds like there's somebody else who's the Lord of their universe. But if you say, I am Ishvara, when we say that, we're talking from the standpoint of the Atma. If I say I am Ishvara, then the Jiva Upadhi has to be part of Ishvara. Right? And the Atma then is Brahman.
But what about the Buddhi being the Lord of the universe?
But the Buddhi isn't the Lord of the universe. The Buddhi is limited. How can the Buddhi be the Lord of the universe?
Right, Lord in a limited way. I've heard that, or you're the creator of your universe. And I've heard it within this lineage in a way that the person made sense, the way they presented it, but I didn't get
you can't it talk like that. You can't talk like that unless you're talking from the standpoint of the Atma. And then say the Atma, but if you say, see, those words are very funny. If you say, your Buddhi is the Lord of this universe.
But you, Atma, are the Lord of your universe. That
but if,
sense,
even if you say the Atma is the Lord of your universe, the your is a little funny there.
Mm-hmm. But what about Jiva Srishti? That maybe didn't that's what they're talking
about. I just thought of that. See, if you say... But if they're teaching that, they have to be really careful if they use those words. There's Ishvara Srishti, which is just the objective Maya Upadhi, right? This whole Ishvara's objective creation. As the creation, you can look at Ishvara Srishti like this. The creation as it actually is. The Jiva Srishti is what the individual projects onto the objective creation. But that Jiva Srishti is a subjective projection. It's not an object of projection. So there's no Lord of the universe. There's the Jiva living in their subjective projection, which is projected upon Ishvara. And that's really tough because the subjective projection is powerless to change the objective objective reality, but you're living in that projection. So it can be grueling because the projection isn't true to the reality. And so with jnanam, with knowledge, what happens is that the subjective projection of the jiva starts being pulled in. And so that you're actually living in Ishwara Srishti instead of living in the jiva Srishti. Srishti means creation. And the jiva's projection, Ishwara's, the Maya Upadhi, the manifest knowledge. So once the jiva has knowledge, right, then we're not projecting all of this stuff onto the creation. I need it to be like this, I need it to be like that, I want this, I want that. That projection is drawn in.
So it's like there's a minimal of subjectivity and a greater objectivity.
There'll still be some subjectivity, but much greater objectivity. Much predominantly Ishwara Srishti for the Jnani. For the Ajnani, predominantly Jiva Srishti. You know? And you know, in psychology, in the psychological world also, we're trying, on a less of a level, we're trying to withdraw in some of these unconscious projections. And now we're doing it on a much deeper level with Vedanta. But even in psychology, how do we really help our clients? Is by getting rid of the Jiva Srishti, so that they can be in the world in reality, have a more objective relationship with the world.
Yeah. How about the line, you're the center of your universe, your world? Doesn't work?
No, it can work, but all of these things depend on how you unfold it. Because, well, in a sense, everyone is the center of their world because you're the center of your experience. All of your experience, say just from every jiva, all of the experience, who's at the center of it in your life? Who's at the center of your experience? It's you. But you have to you don't want to become a narcissist because everybody else is at the center of their experience too, not just you. Right? But it's, right? But it's also very true to realize that in all the experiences that you have, there's only one thing that is always there, and that is you. Not your thoughts, not your emotions, not your experiences, not even your ahankara, because those are always changing. But you are always there. The conscious being is always there. And that's, in fact, very important thing, even in terms of this knowledge. That's a very important point, because there's something to differentiate the one who is always there, no matter what,
and then
from the one that is not.
And how is that connected to Ishwara then? What's a good way of making it?
To understand that Ishwara, you have to realize this, the upadi, about your body, your mind, your sense organs, your thoughts, your moods, your emotions, the ahankara, everything that makes Edward different from somebody else has to be seen as being part of the creation. And that yourself is not held by any one of those parts.
Because that's the one that's constant.
Yeah. And so this, you have to see, instead of that Dehatma Buddhi, I am here and you're there, you have to realize that all of this is you and this body is included in that whole. And it's very helpful also because, and the Buddhists put a lot of emphasis on this without putting, in my opinion, they don't highlight enough the Atma, the self. But they do highlight, and Vedanta does too, we just have to see it, the interconnectedness. Like this is what this whole experience is it's a whole, you know. So say in your relationship with somebody, that's a dyad. There's the subject from your standpoint, the subject and the object. But you could go like this: subject and object, and you are the subject and the object. And so that whole interrelation, that whole relationship, that whole interchange that is producing an emotion, say, You're both. You're both. They're both part of your you're the whole. You're not just, it's not just them against you. You are part of the whole. Do you see what I'm saying there?
No. I don't know if you're talking from the standpoint of Jiva Srishti or as things really
no,
are.
No, as things really are. As things really are, when your prarabdha is taking place, there's subject-object within the duality. I'm the subject, you're the object. But in reality, the subject and the object are a dyad. They're interrelated, and they are producing an experience. It's not just that the objects are impacting me. It's that there's a dyad. There's the subject and the object, both of which are involved in the creation of this experience. So that's why when Swamiji does these, a lot of guided meditations now, just on recognizing, just think of the people that you're related to, like you think if there's somebody that you're having tension with, for instance, is to see the dyad. There's you, there's the other person, and there's the tension that's being produced in this dyad, and this tension was caused on this other one person's part from this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, on this person's part, this happened, this happened, this. And so there's a whole network that went into the production of this emotion that is taking place between the two members of this dyad. And you are the self of both. You are the self of the whole, in fact. And so that's a way of gaining some objectivity, because otherwise we just see everything coming at me rather than my being a part of it.
Well, that becomes Ishvara's story then, right?
Yeah, so you have to see that your body, mind, sense organs are, and all of the moods and emotions and things that you go through are part of Ishvara's story. And it's much more involved. It's much more...
It's more than just this body here,
that's
or just
right.
me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays they talk about things like mirror. There's a part of the brain that they call mirror neurons or something.
Yeah.
Or, right? Like, so if some... Like, you see all the times if there's a baby in the room, the baby's chortling, everybody starts smiling and laughing with the baby.
Yeah, there's interconnectedness in all on all levels.
Yeah.
And so then to realize you're... yourself as being the self of all of it, you know, and not, it's just very, very helpful for kind of teasing out all of the knots in the psyche.
But to recognize that yourself is the self of all of it, you'd have to have a pretty good viveka that is the satyam mitya, right? I mean, you'd have to
and
have
Ishvara.
Pretty solid.
Satyam mitya and understanding of Ishvara. But understanding of Ishvara is Vedanta. Because Vedanta is not just Satchitananda. It's I am the whole.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But to recognize I am the whole, you have to appreciate Ishvara. Yeah.
You have to do what?
Appreciate Ishvara. Otherwise the consciousness is limited to the upadhi, to this, to the human upadhi. We don't see that this creation is an expression of consciousness, manifest knowledge. That's
So somehow this giving of the upadhi, individual upadhi over to Ishvara facilitates seeing that I am the whole.
Yeah.
I mean, but there's still like a bridge where between, like you could still have, well, there's Ishvara and then there's the Atma. You know what I mean? I mean, you could still have
that. Yeah, except that won't be there. If the satya mitya is there, right? Because, but if this, yeah, so that's that has to be there. The body, mind, sense organs have to be given over to Ishvara, and the mityatva of Ishvara has to be understood. But to understand the mityatva, you have to understand the satya. Yeah.
Is there a little formula that just unpacks that right away? I mean, you take five steps and bingo. In a way, not really.
No formulas. But there's all of these prakriyas. I was just doing one of Swamiji's,
uh-huh.
I think it was maybe a few that I was doing on these, I'm doing these transcriptions, where he's talking about the prakriyas, all the teaching methodologies, and this one that I was doing, he's talking about how this I can't forget the first name of that. Adyarupa Apavada. You know, well, that's too big of a topic. There's, in the prakriyas, there's a certain methodology that runs through all of the prakriyas in order to, prakriya means teaching methodology. This Adyarupa Apavada has to do with really breaking down the satya mitya. It has to do with the superimposition. First seeing the superimposition, then removing it. So that the adhishtana, what is the being of that superposition is recognized. So all of these teaching methodologies involve this. So satyam mitya. Everything is, all of the prakriyas are meant to reveal satyam mitya. Even drikdrisha, he talks a lot about drikdrisha. He says with drikdrisha, without drikdrisha you can't get there at all. It's not possible because you have to release the Atma from the Upadi, from your Upadi, in order to understand Ishvara. But all of the prakriyas are only really in service of Satyam Mitya. And that means that the superimposition has to be removed, which is what these terms are. Adhyarupa Apavada. We'll go into that later. Let's stop here.